Okay, recording going. And let's get the screen share. Okay. Can everybody see my screen?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's see here. All right. So basically, we got, we're going to be talking about Parshas Mishpatim and focusing in on the Baba Machteret, which is to say the intruder. And we're going to compare the basically when can you shoot an intruder. We're going to compare in American experience, in American law, what type of circumstances one's allowed to shoot an intruder, and it's quite a few. And we're going to compare that, see the difficulties with that, the opportunities and difficulties. And the benefits and difficulties, I guess I should say. And each one of those is going to get a case. One of the cases is going to show the benefits of shooting, and the other one is going to show the challenges of shooting. Then we're going to see the law of that, and then we're going to compare that, see some challenges with the law and the cases, and then see how the Torah deals with the same situation. So starting off, we're going to start. There's two cases. One is a woman homeowner in Georgia, and one is a male homeowner in Texas. So we're going to start with the woman homeowner in Georgia. And there's no audio here, but the video is pretty self-evident. I'm just going to turn on, and as we're watching it, we're just keeping think in mind, is this a justified shooting in your intuition? And we'll see the law, and then see the Torah law. But first, we'll start off with our own intuition. What do you think? And then we'll see the other one, starting with this one. This is actual footage from an actual police scare. Okay. I'm going to stop at that point because pretty much we've seen everything we need to see. There's a little bit more, but it doesn't really go to the fundamentals of the case. All right. So let's think about case number one of the two cases of shooting an intruder. Why did the people have their guns drawn as they searched the woman's house?
They wanted to intimidate or kill anybody they encountered while they were robbing the house.
Yeah, interesting. Interestingly enough, it would seem so, but then when actually the person comes, they ran away, you know? Sort of an interesting phenomenon. They were very close to each other, incredibly so, which was sort of an interesting thing.
Seems like they were more afraid that they would have to be in a confrontation.
Yeah, I think they learned really quickly that guns are really scary.
Right.
Yeah, it's a very unnatural feeling to have bullets shot at you.
Right. Right. There's a sense of empowerment when you have a gun, but the actually having shots fired is a completely different situation, as Scott's pointing out. It's interesting. And they completely melted down when she was actually shooting at them. They completely lost their nerve and ran away. So there's a certain amount of fantasy there of a gun empowering someone there's something totally different of having the mentality to actually use it or the presence of mind to use it properly.
Well, it seems like it's at least in this case, it really depends on which side of the gun you're on. I mean, if you're the woman who came out to quote unquote defend herself or her home,
right?
had no issues with her nerves.
Right.
The three folks who kind of charged into the house and trying to do whatever they were trying to do didn't seem to have any nerve at all.
It's interesting, right? You would think that it looked like they were, you know,
they were gangbangers or something.
Think they would have the advantage because they had planned this thing. They came in with a plan, and she's surprised, but yet.
And they had the numbers, too.
And then the numbers as well. But yet the woman had the presence of mind and was victorious in this situation. One of those people that we saw coming in was killed. She killed one of them. Did the thieves stay in the house when the woman confronted them? Where'd they go?
They ran.
They ran.
They ran out the door as fast as they could.
Yeah. Now, Alyssa, what do you think that's significant that they ran away insofar as her justification shooting?
I mean, kind of, I was trying to remember where all the guys, but yeah, it seemed like they all ran out.
They ran out. Let's say, just to review it, so they came in with their guns drawn, but as soon as she comes in, they start running away, and she shoots at them both inside her house, and as they're running out, she's at the door still shooting.
Well, you see? This woman had just seemed to have such confidence, and I mean, maybe they would have taken more control if it was someone who was more of a victim. But she really kind of took over,
right? Very much so.
One woman show, and didn't really seem to back down or anything. And I think that really affected the other people.
Right, right. Now, just remember exactly what happened there as we go into the next question. We'll review one more time. At what point did the woman stop shooting at the intruders, Alyssa? Do you remember?
I could be wrong. When they were all out of the house, or
they're already outside the house. Was she shooting at them outside the house?
She was, right?
Yes, yes, inside the house and out.
Yeah.
And that leads to a little bit of complexity, right? I mean, of course, there's a little bit of complexity even in the house, but once they're out of the house, it becomes even more complex.
Unless it's kind of like don't.
Yeah, Alyssa.
Oh, sorry. I was just saying as if it was as if like, you know, don't come back. Like, don't like really keep running.
Keep running.
I'm not stopping. So
she also had like, she was flooded with like this overabundance of adrenaline. So she kind of like lost control for a second. You know what I mean? Like she fired at least four or five times. Maybe like I couldn't even count like
quite a few times. I didn't
shooting, not even thinking.
I stopped.
I think if we watch the video, you'll see that the slide is locked back on her. But I think she expended all her ammunition.
Yeah, she kept on going.
She was going.
So she shot quite a few shots. Mendel, you've got a little bit of experience with weapons. How many shots do you think that would be with the sort of weapon she had?
Anything, depending on what it is, you know, it could be up to 17, 18 rounds. I don't think she fired that many.
But 10, would you say 10 would be a reasonable?
It looked like approximately 10 rounds, yeah.
Yeah.
Quite depending on what state she's in also, it would be different. Oh, she's in Georgia, so she could have up to 16, 17, 18 rounds.
Right. She could have so clearly she shot quite a few rounds even as they were outside.
Yeah.
Was the woman shooting an act of self-defense while the intruders were in her house, would you say?
Yeah. I mean, she might have, she saw they had guns.
Okay.
There were like at least three of them.
Yes, true. Does everybody agree? What do you think, Alyssa? Was this an act of self-defense? Walter in the house?
Yes, absolutely.
Mendel?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. It seems to transition, but even in the house, it's really difficult to justify what she did.
Oh, you think so? How come?
Because they're starting, like, as soon as she presents the firearm, they turn and scatter.
Okay.
That's a major question. That's a major question.
Okay. So for you, if let's say they had not scattered, would you have said that was definitely self-defense?
Yeah. I mean, if you presented a firearm and pointed a gun at them and they started pointing a gun back at you in your house, I would say that that's, especially if they're looking at you and starting to point a gun at you. But if you present a firearm to somebody and they turn tail and run, I don't know how you could justify that. And that seems to be pretty kind of clear about what happened here.
Right. Well, what do you think?
Yeah, I mostly agree with my brother. I think it's really tough to say, but I in my view, like, if man or woman, if you're in your house by yourself and three strange people break into your house, it must be extremely frightening. And you must, it's not unreasonable to assume that whether she knew they had guns or not, that she could be afraid for her life.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's interesting that, you know, the video doesn't have any audio,
right.
But I immediately got the impression that the second she saw the three of them, she just started shooting. I don't think she even knew if they had guns or not. I don't know that she, in the dark, it looked dark, that if she would be able to tell. But either way, I mean, if three strange people break into your home and you are by yourself,
mm-hmm.
it must be extremely, I would imagine it's extremely terrifying. It's very scary.
Would you agree with the same turning point that once they turn tail?
No, I mean, at once, I would suspect that once someone starts shooting and realizes that, like, this could be a life or death situation, I would imagine it's quite difficult to have the presence and thoughtfulness to then say, oh, they're running away now, I'll stop.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So let's, I just want to get everybody's opinion on that. So we got basically, so in principle, Shmuel might agree with Mendel that they might not be a threat, but from the point of view of the requirement on the person to make judgments, once they were threatened, how they respond to that threat, they have the license to kill, because you can't ask a person to be making that type of judgments, even if maybe if they were, you know, watching a video game and they were just talking about it, they'd say, you know what, there's not really a threat here. But once they're there and they feel threatened justifiably, their response, they have the license to respond, because you can't ask them to make that judgment. Mendel, you disagree with that and think that a person, that's it. You have a gun, you got a responsibility, you got to be able to mimic the distinction between whether there's a threat or not a threat. And the mere fact that there's a threatening situation doesn't give you license to shoot. Is that what you're thinking, Mendel?
I think so. I guess I reserve the right to amend that.
Okay, that's your thought right now. Okay.
Yeah.
Scott, what do you think?
Sorry, what was the question?
I'm basically trying to explore if there's a if the mere fact that there's a threatening situation, three people in your house, is that, does that justify you're shooting, because as
yeah, absolutely.
Or would you modify that like Mendel and say, if they are not backing away, then yes. But once they start backing away, you have a responsibility to have the sufficient coolness of mind to be able to judge that that's not a threat anymore. Or like
right, you do, and it's very hard for, I think, the average person to kind of like I said, like, she might have been sleeping and woken up and she saw three people with guns rummaging through her house. So she grabbed a gun and just came out blazing.
Right.
It's not like she, you know, had enough time to like get a control of her emotions, because she might have some, you know, range training, but she's not, you know, trained to deal with, you know, armed intruders.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's very hard for her to like stop shooting after like two or three rounds and just let loose with the whole clip until there's no more shooting, and she finally is able to like realize that everybody's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? She just like that, you know, you have blinders on and you're just like shooting until there's like nobody around you.
What do you think, Alyssa?
Much what Scott and Shmuel said, it's, you're not in a normal mental state. You're just going to do everything you can to protect yourself. But she's not thinking rationally, or I mean, not rationally, she's not thinking, okay, well, they left, so maybe I should stop. Like, if you're just not processing that when there's three people in your home with guns, and not to put it this way, but, you know, also maybe, like, as a woman, you're also, like, and there are these men in your home, not to go the gender route, but, like, you know, actually, to be honest, if I was a man, I'd feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I would, yeah. It works both ways.
That if I was a man, I'd feel exactly the same way. You're just going to keep shooting until you can't shoot anymore. Just because you're just trying to protect yourself. You're not thinking rationally. You're doing your instinct.
Okay. Now, just to conclude, is there... There's, I guess, a few points here. One is when the people in the house, in other words, they start running away, Lastly, they're running out of the house. I guess lastly, they're in the street. Is there a point at which shooting at a retreating thief is definitely not an act of self-defense, but rather vigilante justice? Is there such a point, or
They get in their car and they start driving
away. And they're already driving.
And you chase down the car and you're firing in down the street at the car.
Yeah, that'd be too much.
That's a bit too much.
So, but how about they're getting? So they're still running. So what's your point, Scott? Where is that exact point where you say that's it?
I would say it's gone too far when their backs are to you and they're running away. I would say and they're not going to stop and come back. So I would say that's the point when you really should stop.
They're sufficiently far away that it's absolutely clear that they're not intending to come back. And if they do, you can tell that they've started to come back.
Right.
Alyssa, you agree with that, or you have a different point?
You're muted.
Sorry. I agree.
Pretty much agree. Mendel?
I disagree. I think I think as soon as somebody turns their back, you can't shoot them, whether they're in the house or not. If they've turned their back to you, that means that their focus has shifted to something else, and they're I would think that they're not an immediate threat to you because they have turned away from you. And I think what police who have oodles of training, whether it's good or bad, is debatable. But I mean, when they're brought up, and fired and put in jail, et cetera, for shooting people in the back, in exactly this type of, in a similar case, the only similarity is they're turning their back. I think that's a good indicator also.
Cool.
I think that it's hard to say. And I think it's hard to say because I think that, to me, the real question is at what point, how long does it take for your average well-adjusted adult to regain control of their emotions after what is probably perceived as a life-threatening situation? And the difference is police do get a great deal of training on how to deal with that. Whereas your average citizen encounters a situation like this maybe once in their life. And so to determine when is the appropriate moment to stop shooting or to stop defending yourself if you perceive your life to be in danger is really hard to judge.
Somebody just joined. Hi, who is that? Can you announce who you are, the last person who just joined?
It's Sean.
Hey, Sean.
Hi.
We're basically talking about the case of a person who intrudes into a house and going through the the last question really brings it out. When is that self-defense if you shoot at them? When is it a vigilante justice? And there's some differences of opinion. But basically, the two opinions are if the intruder is turning to run away, according to Mendel, or is already out of the house and clearly not a threat, according to Scott and Alyssa, then that's already vigilante justice. Shmuel takes a different position and says that you can't ask, once a person has been threatened in that way, their mentality is so shattered that since you're not a trained policeman or a soldier, and you cannot ask them to make judgments or blame them for the shooting because once they were justified in their threat to begin with. You're welcome to join in there, Sean, or we could continue on.
You could continue.
Okay. So now we're talking, the first case is a case pretty clear cut. Of justification, at least in the very beginning of the situation. And before I go into the second one, I just want to look at American law, or again, it's not really a law, it's a principle that many states have. I'm just going to go with this one because I think it's the one that applied both in Georgia and Texas, Every state is a little bit different, but I'm not going to use this one as a starting point. And I found it on the internet. If someone has a fairly good level of knowledge about it, an eviction agent, I guess they're in people's houses and are dealing with this all the time. And the question was, is it legal to shoot an intruder? What if his back is turned? And that's essentially the concept that we were wondering about. So Lawrence Collins answers the question. Sean, can you see that? Or are you on phone only? You're on phone only. So
phone only.
Yeah. So Mendel, you're a little bit of a outlier here. Let's see where you fit in American law. Would you mind reading that?
Question, is it legal to shoot Castle Doctrine's approach to shooting an intruder. Question, is it legal to shoot an intruder? What if his back is turned? Answer, Lauren Collins, eviction agent, updated July 19th, 2018. So it's within the past year. In Texas, it generally is legal to shoot a burglar, and it doesn't matter whether his back was turned inside your house. According to the Castle Doctrine, he has already demonstrated bad intent toward you and your family by breaking into your habitation while you were in it. Shooting a burglar in the back is sometimes called preventative self-defense. Someone with his back to you could be picking up something to brain you with, or be heading to the kitchen to get a butcher knife, or going down the hall for your wife or children. Not long after the Castle Doctrine was passed, a man in San Antonio found two men in a spare bedroom after having broken in through a garage door. He killed one in the bedroom with a shotgun while the other pushed past him and ran out the sliding patio door into the backyard. As he was trying to climb over a 6-foot wood privacy fence, the homeowner walked out and shotgunned him in the back, killing him as well. No charges were filed. I found that a little surprising, since the guy was outside trying to run away. So, quote, it all depends, unquote, but history so far is, quote, yes, it's legal, unquote, at least in Texas.
Okay. So so that seems in line with Alyssa and Scott, I would say, at least in the application of Texas. Now let's take a look at the next video, and we'll see some challenges with that. All right. Here it comes. This is in Georgia.
Texas.
I'm sorry, in Texas. Here it is.
This is a tragedy.
Yoshihiro Hattori was a 16-year-old from Japan who was staying in Baton Rouge, Louisiana through the American Field Service Student Exchange Program. Around 8:30 p.m. on October 17th, 1992, Hattori and his homestay brother, 16-year-old Webb Haymaker, were heading to a Halloween party for Japanese exchange students when they arrived at the wrong house due to two numbers being switched on the address they were given. The quiet suburban home actually belonged to the Pierce family, who lived 6 houses down from the house with the party. Hattori was dressed as John Travolta from Saturday Night Fever, and Haymaker had a neck brace and bandages that were not part of a costume, but from an injury he sustained. The two boys rang the front doorbell and then began their way back towards the street when nobody answered. Inside the home, Bonnie Pierce heard the doorbell and used the carport door on the side of their house to see who was outside. Accompanied by one of her 3 children, Miss Pierce opened the door to find 2 young men outside and claimed she was startled after they began approaching her at a fast pace. She quickly slammed the door and yelled for her husband to get his gun. Outside, the 2 teens were leaving the property when they noticed Bonnie Pierce speaking out the side door. Webb Haymaker claims he told Miss Pierce, "We're here for the party," before she slammed the door. Afterwards, the 2 boys continued walking towards the street. Inside the house, 30-year-old Rodney Pierce was watching television and talking to his father on the phone when he heard his wife shouting for him to get his gun. Rodney Pierce did not ask questions or give any hesitation. Instead, he went to their bedroom and retrieved a .44 Magnum handgun from his closet. Mr. Pierce then stepped just outside the carport door entrance. By then, Hattori and Haymaker had made it to the sidewalk when they noticed someone come out of the carport door. Hattori began approaching Mr. Pierce and announcing that they were there for the party. However, Hattori's English was not the best, so it could be hard to understand him at times. Rodney Pierce claims he saw a young male walking around his truck and moving towards him in an aggressive manner, so he raised his Magnum and told the teen to freeze. Haymaker saw the gun and shouted for Hattori to stop, but for reasons unknown, Hattori kept approaching Mr. Pierce. Rodney Pierce heard Hattori saying something, but couldn't understand what it was. He then mistook a camera Hattori was holding in his hand as a gun or other weapon. From 5 feet away, Mr. Pierce shot Hattori on the left side of his chest before running back inside and slamming the door behind him. The bullet had pierced the upper and lower lobes of Hattori's left lung and exited around his ribcage. Haymaker and a neighbor did their best to resuscitate the 16-year-old exchange student, but Yoshihiro Hattori died from blood loss just minutes later. As one of the neighbors was calling for help, Bonnie Pierce could be heard saying, "Go away," as the Pierce family huddled together in their kitchen, waiting for police to arrive. Pierce was charged with manslaughter, and if convicted, faced a maximum of 40 years in prison. His lawyers argued that he was justified in shooting Hattori because he feared for his family's safety. Under Louisiana's Shoot the Burglar law, a person is allowed to use deadly force to protect his home from an intruder. Prosecutors argued that Pierce used excessive force and could have avoided the deadly confrontation by staying inside or stepping back inside his home.
Okay, so that's the counterpoint. And anybody changing their opinion based on this case? I'll start with Shmuel, because the most expansive in his interpretation. What do you think, Shmuel? Would this person be justified in what he did here? This seems to be the case you're talking about. The guy, in his perception, felt threatened. Even though he was mistaken about the fact, in his perception, he was mistaken. Would he be justified in what he did? He made a mistake, but he was justified.
Yeah, it's hard to understand being frightened of a 16-year-old foreign exchange student with a camera in his hand. But I mean, I'm not him. I wasn't there. Like, I don't have a wife and kids to protect. I don't know.
Okay, so you're not sure about this case.
Yeah, it doesn't seem cut and dry. It certainly doesn't seem that he did it out of, you know, outright malice. Like, I'm sure he was just trying to protect his family.
Well, he thought, you know, that this 16-year-old was in the same situation as those other kids. They might not have been much more than 16, the ones in Georgia. You know, they didn't look that old.
But, I mean, the big difference is the situation in Georgia is that those three people were already in that woman's home.
Right.
This kid was outside trying to figure out where the party was.
Good point. Going to Scott, what do you think, Scott? You were pretty expansive in your interpretation as well. Do you stand firm in your concept? Would you have acquitted this guy? Scott?
I think his connection might be frozen. He looks
okay.
He looks pretty wooden in that.
That's true. What do you think, Mendel?
I would stick with my thing. The guy is totally, I think, in the wrong.
Right.
I don't think there's any way to justify what he did. I don't understand what he saw in this kid that was threatening. He wasn't in the house. I guess I get it that he's on the property, but, you know.
Right.
There just seems an incredible disconnect between, you know, the perception and his reality.
Hi, Scott, you're back. Were you able to hear us?
You're muted, Scott.
Oh, he can't operate his thing. What do you think, Sean? Were you able to follow that?
Yeah, I agree with Mendel.
Unjustified. So, okay. So now let's take a look and see how the Torah deals with this complexity, right? So we'll see that the Torah does the area is intrinsically complex. It's not going to be able to deal with all of the. It's not going to be able to completely remove the complexity. But we will see that the Torah does have a way of dealing with this. Okay. So what we're going to do is we basically answered these questions from the perspective of the Castle Doctrine. In fact, he was not found guilty because in his perception, there was an intruder in his property. And in his perception, he was threatened, and he was, no less justified in their perception than the guy who shot the guy who's running over the wall. You know, it's how much more so? And we'll see that the Torah is a little bit of a different perspective on this. We'll come back to these same questions after we see how the Torah approaches it. But part three is the approach of the Torah. And I'm not going to go through the entire Parsha, but I do want to show you where it is in the Parsha. The Parsha begins with the Hebrew, it's Parsha's Mishpatim. These are the laws that you must set before them. It talks about the Hebrew slave, the Hebrew maidservant, manslaughter, murder, cursing a parent, killing slaves, personal damages, an ox which kills, a hole in the ground which is very dangerous, damaged by goring, and there it is, penalties for steal. I put that in blue just to give some sense of the context. So there's a bunch of laws that deal with various sorts of violations people can do to each other in property or in their even to their life or injuries. And in that, there's stealing. So the essential stealing is, maybe I'll start with Mendel. Shmuel, if you don't mind, Mendel read a lot already. 2137.
Yeah, Shmuel.
Penalties for stealing.
If a person in the Torah, that's just a title that this particular Torah translation gives, but actually just the pasuk.
If a person steals an ox or sheep and then slaughters or sells it, he must repay 5 oxen for each ox and 4 sheep for each sheep.
Okay, so it's a pretty severe penalty. You're not just paying the guy back; that you're paying the guy back, and there's a pretty steep fine. More for an ox, a little bit less for sheep, but it's a pretty steep fine. That fine becomes quite a bit more in our case. Would you continue on, Shmuel?
Sure. If a burglar is caught in the act of breaking in and he is struck and killed, he has no blood. In parentheses, it is not considered an act of murder.
That's my explanation. What that means, he has no blood, is not considered an act of murder.
Right.
But Rashi explains it a little bit more.
Rashi says he has no blood. Here the Torah teaches you the lesson. If someone comes to kill you, kill him first. And this one, the thief has come to kill you because he knows that no one can hold himself back and remain silent when he sees people taking his money. Therefore, he, the thief, has come with the acknowledgement that if the owner of the property were to stand up against him, he, the owner, would kill him, the thief.
And therefore, that's he has no blood. He has no blood. Now, does that sound familiar or similar to the Castle Doctrine?
Yeah, it sounds like the state of Texas has a keen understanding of
the
Torah and Rashi commentary.
Preventive self defense. Now, but I do want to call your attention to the exact wording here. He has no blood, right? Now, the translator has that parenthesis, it's not considered an act of murder, which is not false, but I want you to keep your mind on that. He has no blood. There's a little bit more to it, I think, than it's not considered an act of murder. Just thinking about that for a second, what do you think that means, he has no blood? It gives the rationale as to why he doesn't have blood, because he's considering killing the other guy. But why not just say he may kill him, or you should kill him, or whatever it might be? Think about that. Continuing on, Shmuel. However,
if the sun shone upon him, then it is an act of murder to kill him. And Rashi goes on to say, if this sun shone upon him, this is nothing but a metaphor, meaning if the matter is clear to you that he, the thief, is peaceably disposed towards you, similar to the sun, which represents peace in the world, so it is obvious to you that he has not come to kill you.
Continuing on.
Even if the owner of the money rises against him, for instance, if a father breaks into in to steal his son's property, it is known that the father has mercy on his son, and he has not come with the idea of murdering him.
So there's a
That's an extreme example.
Yeah, it's a very good example. But we'll get to that in a second. But the basic point is that there's a very clear proviso here. Namely, there is something in what Mendel was saying. There is a dimension of judgment that the person must make. Now, Shmuel is a good point, too. We're going to come back to that in a second. But just starting off with where Rashi is going, there is some sort of requirement on the person to be making judgments. You see, even if he is in fear for his life, even if he's in a situation where he is facing someone who he knows would not have come in unless he intended to kill him or was thinking of killing him, nonetheless, he's got to be able to make judgments. This guy has turned his back. He's clearly not going to attack me. Rashi doesn't really define what constitutes knowing it clearly, but it gives the extreme example. If you see, oh, it's my father, right? You can't just say, oh, it doesn't matter. He broke in. He wouldn't have broken in unless he wanted to kill me. No, that's an exception. And you have to say that in that case, you can't just shoot your father because he would not kill his son. And in that case, you wouldn't be able to do that. Now, just go into some, are you able to talk yet, Scott, or are you still technically challenged?
You're muted, Scott.
Still technically challenged over there. How about you, Sean? Are you able to hear what's going on?
I hear what's going on.
Okay, good. Now, so now we're going to have to clarify, and obviously, the Rashi does not completely explicate the difference where exactly to apply Mendel, where exactly to apply Shmuel and Scott and Alyssa. Namely, what constitutes that level of clarity? You know, the guy from, it wasn't Texas, I called it Texas, really it was Louisiana, could say, all right, fine. You know, it was absolutely clear, it's like the sun, but it wasn't exactly clear like the sun. I saw that, you know, it's a camera now, it's easy after the fact to take a picture and see it was a camera. To me, it looked like a gun. You see a Japanese exchange student who's very, very innocent. I saw this young guy coming and talking, and I told him to freeze, he wouldn't stop. It wasn't clear to me that it wasn't my father, and it wasn't anybody I knew. It wasn't clear to me. So how exactly do you measure that? So that's where the Rambam comes into the picture, the Book of Law. And he'll take a lot of these concepts. He, as we're going to see, it's not absolutely clear even now. There's going to be more work to be done. But I put in red some important criterion, which I think will help us. So what I want you to be thinking about as we read this is, what factors does Rambam add to our intuition that a person has a right to defend himself, but that it has to do with the person not having blood, and A, and B, that there are limits. There are limits along the way that Mendel is saying, but exactly how do we define what that judgment, requirement of judgment is for a person who is in a very, very difficult situation, as Scott and Shmuel are saying. Mendel, would you read that?
Maimonides' Laws of Stealing, Chapter 9, Law 7 through 12. So law number 7. When a person breaks into a home, whether at night or during the day, license is granted to kill him.
Okay. I put that into red. Is there something significant about that? He breaks into the home. Mendel mentioned that earlier. The difference between the first case and the second case. Why is that significant?
Well, at this point, it's a major differentiation.
Why? What's the significance?
Because they're in the home. They've demonstrated intent to do something.
In other words,
some degree of intent.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Mendel.
Yeah, I was just going to say there's some degree of intent demonstrated, like they're demonstrating intent to take your stuff or some other nefarious purpose.
In other words, it can't be confused with a person. In other words, in the second case in Louisiana, it's normal for people to come to your door. Not just anybody who comes to the mere fact that someone comes to your door is not a breaking in. It's true, they're on your property, but not every entry onto your property is by its very nature a threat or a threatening act or an illegal act or an intrusion. There are permissible entries to knock on the door and ask if you're allowed in, you know?
Vacuum cleaner salesman, encyclopedia salesman.
Right. So breaking into the home indicates an objectivity. Namely, it's clear that this person is violating a clear intent of the homeowner that to secure certain areas that people do not come into in a way which is obvious and undeniable. The person comes onto the doorstep, there was no fence saying he shouldn't come on, and it's a regular thing to come on. Person breaks into a home, they have violated a clear boundary that the homeowner has made to block people from entering into an area. That person is ignoring his rights and would only do so. He knows that the homeowner is going to protest that and is obviously taking countermeasures to a person who's going to protest that. Continuing on, Mendel.
If either the homeowner or another person kills him, the burglar, they're not liable.
Now we're getting somewhere interesting.
Yeah.
In other words, and this really goes deeper into what it means he has no blood. No one has spoken about that. In both cases, the woman herself was the homeowner, and the man was the homeowner. The Torah is, in a certain extent, going much, much further. You're just walking on the street, and you see that burglar inside the house, this exact same ones, if the reverse is occurring, you're just walking along, you happen to have a license to carry, you see those burglars in there, you know the guy, you know that those are burglars, it's not the homeowner, you could shoot them from the outside. Anybody could. Just a friend who's walking on the street. That's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
What do you think of that, Sean?
That'd be an interesting case.
Does that make sense to you, Sean?
In some ways it does.
Why?
Well, you're helping your friend or your neighbor.
That's true. In other words, why should it be limited to the homeowner? This guy mm-hmm. is threatening the homeowner. Every Jew has to rescue this guy, right? Let's say
like a lot of neighborhoods have like a neighborhood like watch.
A neighborhood watch guy, right? Let's say you see some people beating up this, like Moshe saw somebody beating up a Jew. He got involved and protected the Jew. He didn't just say, "Oh, let that Jew take care of himself." He intervened. You see, so to this guy. Now, what's interesting is that. What about normally, in a normal case of self-defense, you have to warn the guy if you possibly can. Like, stop! And like, freeze, you know? No such obligation. He sees the guy stealing, just shoot him down. What do you think that implies by he has no blood? Unlike normal self-defense, you've got to warn the guy. You've got to try to stop the guy. And if you can, if you can stop him by injuring him rather than killing him, you have to. In this case, you don't have to. You can kill him. You don't have to, but you can. If you want to stand down, you can. In a normal case of self-defense, you're not allowed to. If you see a Jew being in danger for his life and you can stop that, you have to. And if you should try to warn the guy first, but you can't just say, if I want to, I will. If I don't want to, I don't. In this case, you can. If the thief is there, the homeowner is allowed to walk away and say, you know what, take it. I don't want to kill him. The guy outside also. What do you think that, so what does that imply about he has no blood, the thief? It's a very different concept than the castle doctrine. I'll give you just a couple more seconds to think about it. It's an interesting point. It's a hard one. Any sense, anybody? No?
I guess I want to say that he's not guilty of the intent to murder someone.
Right.
That he's not guilty of the most egregious
so what do you think of premeditated murder.
What's that?
So what do you think it means he has no blood?
He has no, this is on the guy who's doing the shooting, right?
This is on the thief. The thief has no blood.
This is about the thief? It's about the thief that he has no blood?
Yeah, thief has no blood. That's the source of the license to kill him. He has no blood.
That he's denied. I guess I would say that means that the thief has denied. He's almost like a sociopath. He hasn't considered that there are other people in the world. That everything is really just for him. He could take whatever he wants. There are no other people.
How does that explain why you're allowed to kill him? Then he has no blood. So why are you allowed to kill him?
Because he's demonstrated the intent of taking whatever, that everything belongs to him. He's going to take whatever he wants whenever he wants it.
That's a justification for why he has no blood. But what does it mean? What sort of person is this that doesn't have blood? So that, I think, means I wish I could a little bit more time to let you think about it, but I only have a couple more minutes. I think what that means is his right to life is suspended. He's not alive. He's not legally alive. So when you shoot the guy, your license to kill him is his rights to living. His definition as a living being has been taken away. He's a walking dead man. Therefore, when you kill the guy, you have been murdered. He's dead. And, which is a very different thing than self-defense. And that's why you don't have to warn him. He's dead. And that's why you don't have to kill him. If you kill him, he was dead, so you're not liable. But you don't have to kill him. It's no mitzvah to kill him. If you want to withdraw, you could. But you can kill him. And if you kill him, he has no blood. He's not alive. He has no rights to life. And if you kill him, therefore, you did not violate his right to life. And I think everything you're saying, Mendel, is correct. That's why his right to life is suspended. He's a sociopath. He's a danger. All those things are true. But what's the end point? What's the license to kill him? He has no blood. He's not alive. His right to life is taken away. And therefore, you can kill him because he has no right to life. And that's now moving on. We'll see that there. I think that explains a lot more. Maybe I'll let Shmuel read a little bit more now. Okay, Shmuel, if you don't mind, number eight.
Number eight. The license mentioned above applies to a thief caught breaking in or one caught on a person's roof, courtyard, or enclosed area, whether during the day or during the night. Why does the Torah mention breaking in? Because it is general practice for thieves to break in at night.
So what's the general principle? It's the same thing as, it's emphasizing the breaking in. He's demonstrating disregard for the privacy and security of the homeowner. Not talking about his front yard where an encyclopedia salesman can come in. So the Rambam would have a clear distinction between case one and case two. So long as those people are in our house, they broke in, they manifested disregard for the homeowner's life. Their right to life is suspended. Once they start turning and trying to flee, that's something else. It becomes clear, it should become clear to the homeowner that the person is no longer a threat, and therefore their right to life is restored. Continuing on, Shmuel.
Number nine, why did the Torah permit the blood of such a thief to be shed, although he is only attempting to steal money? Because it is a legal presumption that if the house owner or homeowner arises and attempts to prevent the thief from stealing, the thief will slay him. And thus the thief entering his colleague's home to steal is similar to a rodent.
Similar to a rodent. A rodent is more what we would call self-defense. In the Torah, self-defense is a very complicated phenomenon. It doesn't happen often because we are not so much interested in self-defense. We're interested in preventing unjustified killing. So rotif means someone is running after someone else to kill. And again, it's not about self-defense. It's about protecting the loss of innocent life. He's attacking that guy. He has no right to attack him like the Egyptian attacked the Jew. So that person could kill him to stop him. Anybody around could kill him to stop him. Why?
That's a different case. That Good. Seems like a much different case. In the case right. of Moshe and the Egyptian,
yep.
he saw the Egyptian was beating the Jew.
That's right.
In this case, we're talking about some guy who may be drug-addled and is breaking in to maybe steal some quick cash that's laying on True. The counter.
True. And that's why it's not a case of Rodi. It's similar. But I would argue that the difference is that in a Rodave, you are allowed to prevent him from doing the violation of murder to an innocent man by all necessary means. If you can stop him by injuring him, by calling out, you call out. If you can stop him by injuring him, you injure him. With the thief, you don't have to. Because in order to deter the thief, in order to prevent thievery of this type from occurring because it endangers homeowners, the penalty for stealing an ox, you pay 5 oxen. The penalty for stealing a sheep, you pay 4 sheep. The penalty for entering and breaking into someone's house, your right to life is suspended. It's a penalty.
I mean, I understand. I guess I understand that that's a legal presumption in Torah,
mm-hmm.
And in several states of the Union.
Yep.
But I'm not sure what the parallel is that you're drawing between a thief breaking into my house to steal money and Moshe beating the Egyptian.
Because it's something I want to say, go ahead. Did I interrupt somebody?
Not me.
Because the assumption is that by entering, he's already made the decision that he will kill the homeowner. He doesn't have to actually raise his hand like the Egyptian did and attack the Jew. By being in his house, he's attacking that Jew. He's attacking that person.
Okay.
That's the assumption.
Okay.
He's already made that decision. He wouldn't enter into the house, just like the people with their guns drawn. They wouldn't have entered the house unless they'd already thought of the possibility that the homeowner will, of course, protect their property. And they wouldn't have done so unless they decided right, that they're going to attack him if they see him. And therefore, it's the same thing as if they're actually attacking him right now, even though they're not. Once they turn and start running, that's something else. And let's conclude with that, if you don't mind, Shmuel.
Following over to number 10.
Yep.
If it is clear to the house owner that the thief who breaks in will not kill him, and instead is only seeking financial gain, it is forbidden to kill the thief. If the house owner kills him, the house owner is considered to be a murderer. This is alluded to by Exodus 22:2, which states, if the sun shines upon him, i.e. if it is clear to you that the sun, if it is clear, as clear to you as the sun, that he is at peace with you, do not kill him. Therefore, a father who breaks into his son's home should not be killed, but a son who breaks into his father's may be killed.
That's interesting. You can't assume so much with a son. A son is not necessarily so benevolent towards his father as a father is towards his son. That's the assumption there.
Right.
I don't know if that's true in all cases.
But again, that would require some judgment. Could there be a father that it doesn't apply to? Perhaps so. Could there be a son that doesn't apply to? Perhaps so. But it has to be as clear to you as the son. Continuing on, Shmuel, we go to the last case we were talking about. Go ahead.
Number 11, different rules apply with regard to a thief who stole and departed, or one who did not steal but was caught leaving the tunnel through which he entered the home. Since he turned his back on the house and is no longer intent on killing its owner, he may not be slain.
So interestingly enough, just stop for a second.
Yeah.
With what we know now, would the second guy in Louisiana be a murderer, according to the Torah?
Well, that's hard to say because, I mean, according to the, you know, the statement, the kid was walking towards the house.
Didn't break in.
He did not break in. At all. He was never in the house in any way.
He never demonstrated disregard for the he never demonstrated that he had considered that he was going to attack the person. He never broke in.
Right, but yes, that's true. But also, the wife, the initial person who contacted this kid, may have perceived it that way.
But he even if he had been in the house before, he was no longer in the house. He at most entered. Right.
The wife kind of got him all hyped up, though.
Go ahead, Scott.
The wife kind of got him all hyped up.
That's so right.
He's sitting
as
back.
Wives sometimes do.
He was in the back room, cold, you know, doing whatever he was doing, and then his wife screams, comes running, gun. He comes out and like he doesn't. He's just based off her like limited information.
Right.
And, you know, he doesn't know what she saw, just that, like, it's bad enough that she screamed, go get the gun.
It's true, but it wouldn't matter, because the most that could have happened here is that that guy broke in and now is no longer inside. That's the most that could happen.
Right.
Now we enter into another thing, and that's what Shmuel was saying originally, and Scott. The Torah would say, possibly, and this is what the judges would have to judge, he did an act of murder. But maybe it was an accidental murder. Maybe it was a murder where he wasn't in his right mind.
That's why he was...
The homeowner.
Isn't that like the definition of manslaughter or something? It's like unintentional manslaughter or whatever?
That's going to go to premeditation. But this might not even be that, because he might not be in his right mind. That could possibly be, and the judges would have to judge that. Maybe he did an act of murder while crazed out of fear. I don't know. That's a totally different question. Namely, he did an act of murder, and perhaps it was by accident. He did an act of murder, and perhaps he was overwhelmed and he couldn't control himself. Those are things that would have to be judged. But that's a very different question than he was properly using his license to kill. The license to kill is not there, and that becomes a totally different case. You see what I mean, Sean?
Yes.
So one thing one has to ask is, what is the license to kill present, or is the license to kill not present? In the second case, the license to kill is not present. The second question is, even if the license to kill is not present and it's an act of murder, is it a murder that the person did by accident, maybe couldn't control himself, made a mistake? That's a different question. Or maybe he was even overwhelmed. That's a different question. But so too, you have to ask for every murder. So too, you have to ask for every murder. Now, even the first case, would the Torah say that the woman exercised her license to kill in the first case?
Yeah, I think so.
Why? Why, Scott? Had the person broken in
with the kid?
With the woman and with the kids who came into the house.
Yeah, she definitely exercised her license to kill, I would say.
But how about once they were outside the door and running?
No.
I don't know when the kid got killed. If he got killed inside the house, Mendel may be right. Take a look. Read for us Mendel 11 one more time.
Different rules apply with regard to a thief who stole and departed, or one who did not steal but was caught leaving the tunnel through which he entered the home. Since he turned his back on the house and is no longer intent on killing its owner, he may not be slain.
That's he turned his back. Maybe even once he turned his back, you see? And he's leaving. That was Mendel's first point. As soon as they turn their back and are demonstrating that they want to leave, then they're no longer, that the license no longer applies. That is, I think, what Halacha 11 is saying. Pretty much agreeing with Mendel on that one. But Shmuel might have a very powerful point, as does Scott. Even though the license isn't there, there would still have to be a judgment. Maybe it was justified. He did an act of murder, but maybe it was by mistake, or maybe even he couldn't have known that it was murder. Those would be questions the court would have to answer. But this license would not apply as soon as that thief turned and started running away or started moving away. That's different rules. Okay, so a lot to think about. Any questions before we move on? Before we conclude, I should say.
I mean, it's interesting. People pick up a gun and think, you know, okay, well, it's, you know, it's cut and dried. I can defend myself now. But if you take a look at the video again with the Georgia case, you can see that this person very quickly has almost zero training with any of this type of thing. It's like the classic case of a person who bought a gun, put it in their bedside drawer and thought, okay, you know, I can defend myself.
Right.
And then just reacted and just started spraying bullets.
Right.
Very scary. I mean, if that there was a child in the house and there was a stray, she shot accidentally in an untrained or stray way. I mean,
yeah. I'll just conclude with an actual event that occurred when I was in Far Rockaway with my neighbor. He had a shotgun, and people were coming into his house. Pulled out a shotgun, and his wife called the police. And told him someone was actually two people were breaking into their house. So police, of course, didn't show up. And for Rockaway, police were very, very bad, at least at that time. And my neighbor shot at the intruders. And exactly as Mendel's saying, he hit. It was a bedroom, and he hit the bed that his child should have been in. It was a fluke that the kid was not there. By any normal day, that shot would have killed his own child. But he was extremely fortunate that his child was not there. It did scare off the thieves, and you know, it worked out well. But exactly the case that Mendel is talking about. Extremely big responsibility.
Is this a friend of yours? Do you know if he still owned guns?
I don't know.
I'd be curious to know if he gave up guns after that.
Yeah, I don't know.
He moved out of Far Rockaway after that.
Well, I know for a fact he did not move out of Far Rockaway, but I don't know if he owns a gun now or not. But yes, having a gun is a big responsibility. And you got to really, you know, just as the thief has to be thinking about things before he goes into the house, a homeowner or a gun owner has to be thinking about things before they buy and certainly use a gun.
I just wanted to add one thing, like when my computer froze. I Googled just to see if Georgia had a standard ground law similar to that of Florida. And I don't know if that lady was familiar with the law, but it definitely favors the person who's threatened of like, you know, what kind of force and how much force they get to use.
Right.
So like, even if they were outside running away, if she still like, you know, feared for her life, she still had the right to stand your ground. I know some certain states are different.
Right, right. That's the castle doctrine. Different states apply the castle doctrine in different ways, but I'll just let you read that out loud one more time, Scott, and we'll conclude with that. Go ahead, Scott. According to the castle doctrine.
According to the castle doctrine, he has already demonstrated bad intent towards you and your family by breaking into your habitation while you were in it. Shooting a burglar in the back is sometimes called the prevention of self-defense. Someone with his back to you could be picking up something to your brain with, or heading to the kitchen to get a butcher's knife, or going down the hall for your wife or children. Not long after the castle doctrine was passed, a man in San Antonio found two men in a spare bedroom having broken into through the garage. He killed one of them in the bedroom with a shotgun while the other pushed past him and ran out a sliding patio door in the backyard. And he was trying to climb over a 6-foot shotgun, shooting him in the back, killing him too. No charges were filed. I found that a little surprising since the guy was outside trying to run away. So it all depends. But history so far is, yes, it's legal, at least in Texas.
And probably in other states too, though there's going to be some difference. But the Torah disagrees with that. It's a different concept. It's not a concept of self-defense. It's a concept of a penalty to the intruder to deter intrusions, which are a threat. And the penalty is that the thief is assumed to be, even though he isn't, is assumed to be attacking the homeowner, as soon as he breaks in, he's assumed to be attacking the homeowner. It's exactly the same as if he's hitting him or shooting him or attempting to kill him. In other words, the mere fact that he break in is an attempt to kill. And so long as he's in the house, that assumed attempt to kill is there. And the penalty is he loses his right to live and anybody can kill him. As soon as he retreats in a way which is clear to the to any observer, not just the homeowner, but any observer, then the assumption is gone. His right to live is restored. He has blood. His right to live is restored, and one may not kill him. And then how can it be
that the guy makes a move to retreat or to leave, and the homeowner doesn't see it, but he's still liable to kill him if somebody else sees it? That seems to be what you're saying.
All right. Say that again, Mendel. What's the scenario?
The case you seem to just describe was one in which a burglar broke in.
Yep.
And then made a move to retreat, but the homeowner either didn't see it, but somebody else did see it.
Right, if there are witnesses. Let's say there's – how would you know that? There would have to be witnesses that saw it through the window.
Right,
so in that case, I mean, that would be a complicated case. Namely,
right. It
has to be clear to him like the sun. So somehow you would have to know that the – I guess the people have to be right there in the room with him. And right. and they told him he's running away, and the guy says, "I don't care, he's in my house," and shoots him, something along those lines.
Right. Okay.
Then that guy would be an accident, would be a person's out of his mind, but that the license to kill would be gone, and okay. The judges would have to measure: like Shmuel was saying, is this person challenged beyond the capacity of a person to keep his clear judgment? That's a totally different question. Then did he exercise his license to kill? Okay?
Okay.
Make sense, Shmuel?
Yeah.
Sean?
Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
Very good. Okay, gentlemen, a pleasure learning with you. Sorry I went a little bit over. Exciting topic. And, a lot more to be thought about, but interesting area. Gentlemen, have a wonderful week, a good Shabbos, and enjoy the Parsha.
You too. Good Shabbos.
Thanks. Bye-bye.